Hello. In this audio snippet, we hope to get to the second person we wanted to talk about after having talked about Thaddeus Stevens. But before we get to that person, I would like to say several things related to news stories that have come up this week. To more or less certify the condition of the country. The country is within a short period of dying. And I no longer categorize it as months or weeks. It's just a short time left. A lot of these stories sort of certify that that condition, that it is a condition that we as a nation have chosen not to come out of, stubbornly chosen not to come out of. And there are several other little things that we wanted to mention in the context of those stories. So the first story that we wanted to quickly talk about is a headline that says Nikki Haley to Fox and Friends, quote, humanize, unquote, abortion issue, stop, quote, demonizing it, unquote. And this was from the gatewaypundit.com, and it was posted on the 27th of August, 2023, by a lady called Margaret Flavin, or Flavin. I'm not sure how she pronounces her surname, but so the story is about this Republican presidential candidate, Nikki Haley. I think she's from somewhere in the South. I think she's from South Carolina, but I'm not quite sure, to be frank. Never been a fan of hers. But Trump, you know, trusted her. And she was, I think, the ambassador to the UN, the U.S. ambassador to the UN under the Trump administration. I've never really trusted her. Now, the reason why I mention this is not, you might say I'm going to say certain things, but I'm not going to say exactly what you would expect me to say about this quote of hers. Sharing our thoughts, let us read. Let me read here what she actually said in the full context. It says here in this article that Ainsley Earhart, one of the reporters at Fox News, asked her, be realistic with the numbers. Yes, we don't have enough votes in the House or in the Senate to abolish this. How did you come up with this answer? And what are you hearing from the voters after that debate? So she said, Nikki Haley said, Ainsley, that's the answer from my heart. You know, I'm surrounded by blessings and God has blessed me with an amazing husband and two wonderful children. But having said that, I think it's really important that all of us remember everybody has a personal story. So while I'm unapologetically pro-life, I don't judge anyone for being pro-choice. I think we have to humanize this issue. We've got to stop demonizing this issue. And then she goes on to say, I think the division in this country has gone too far. We have to start looking at the vision going forward. My vision is, how do we save as many babies as possible and support as many moms as possible? If that's the case, we'd be honest with the American people. Tell them what is possible and what is not possible. And let's bring people together based on humanity, not based on making people hate each other. And I think it's happening. It's happened too long, and I'm just not going to be a part of that. I refuse to be a part of that. I read this, and it's like a mixture of anger and more or less another emotion. But it just shows how messed up we are as a country. You know, first of all, she says, I don't judge anyone for being pro-choice. So she's an apologetically pro-life, but she doesn't judge anyone who's pro-choice. And it's always that stance of being in the middle, being moderate, not decide, not being radical about what you believe. So it is. How can if you are pro-life, unapologetically pro-life, why are you pro-life? Well, referring to the term as it's used politically, pro-life, that it means that you think abortion is murder. So if you really think abortion is murder, because otherwise, why would you be against abortions? I mean, really, if it's not because there's a murder involved or a destruction of a life, of a life form, whether you think of it as an animal or just a biological, it's a life form that develops into a full-blown human being. When adult, I mean, all of us were fetuses once, and we had our personality formed as a fetus. So we were that fetus. It's not like a part of us was that fetus and we grew into suddenly develop into who we are now. No, we were that fetus. We just grew, just like we were that little baby that was born. And but obviously we didn't have all our capacities developed, but we developed into it. But we were already that person, that or that entity. But so the thing is that if you're pro-life, then it's because you believe that there's a life form there that is being brutally terminated. And otherwise, there's no reason to be, quote, pro-life. So if you really believe that, then how can you then turn around and say, I don't judge anyone for being pro-choice? So if a person is being pro the termination, the abrupt termination of a life form, just because, then you have to say, well, this is wrong. Now, the sad thing or the weird thing is that in a certain sense, this idiot who Trump appointed, and who was so prominent in his administration, does have a point, but it's so mixed in with so much moderate rubbish that the point gets lost. And the point is that when you're talking about these things, the abortion thing, you can't just go in a very dogmatic way and say this is wrong and whatever. You also have to look at the aspect of what happens when people, when let's say a teenage girl becomes pregnant, unexpectedly pregnant, because she's engaging in certain behavior, but she becomes pregnant, and that at that point her life has been radically altered, and the option that the pro-choice people. Pro-choice, I hate that term. Pro-abortion people say is just go ahead, just get rid of it and move on with your life. That way you can finish high school and and not have this baby totally destroy your life. So the and then so. Then she hears from the pro-life, quote unquote, people saying, "Oh, you can't do it. That is wrong," and whatever. But it's all in a very kind of harsh tone. And then if that young lady is very susceptible or very easily manipulated by emotions, or doesn't have a solid foundation. Then she's going to listen to the pro-abortion people and just terminate the pregnancy and terminate the fetus and kill the fetus. So the pro-life people have not gone in and said, well, you have to remember that life is sacred, that's inside of you. Now we need to protect. You need to protect it. I know this is a horrible thing. to endure 9 months of pregnancy. It's going to disrupt your life. But if you don't want to raise the baby, then give birth to it. Allow it to live. Don't just kill it because your life has been radically inconvenienced. Just wait it out for 9 months. Give birth to the baby. Give it up for adoption. So many people are willing to, are so eager to have babies adopted. So many couples who desire a baby. So there'd be no problem, you know, finding someone, and let that little fetus have a life and an opportunity. And then we will work as a society. We will come together as a society around you to help you to get your life back together after that. It's going to be just nine months of your life. If it's a high school thing, for example, that you're worried about, well, you might have to, in the worst of cases, I mean, you can still go to school whilst pregnant, but assuming that for some reason you can't or whatever, it's just 9 months. You're going to lose 1 year of your life. And then you can finish high school just 1 year late and then move on with your life. Everything has been altered by 9 months, and that's it. But in those 9 months, you've allowed someone to live, a little creature who would otherwise have been destroyed, would be given an opportunity to live 50, 60, 70, 80 years of life. And have a chance at have the opportunity that you were given because you were a fetus once. You know, that's the sort of talk that that the people who are in this dilemma, who get caught up in that situation of having an unwanted pregnancy, don't hear from the pro-life group. And that's where the non-quote demonizing comes in. There's a certain validity to what she's saying. But the problem is, it's placed on a foundation of, we don't judge. No, you have to judge. I mean, otherwise, what the hell are you doing? I mean, you don't stand for anything if you don't stand for something. But that's the problem, that we have people who don't understand that you need to be, quote, radical about certain things, you know, just like, people are radical about not eating poison. You know, I will not eat poison. I'm totally against it. No one is going, oh, I need to eat 50% good food and 50% poisonous food because I want to be a moderate. I don't want to be an extremist. So you have to be radical about certain things. We have to be radical about, for example, not allowing the abuse of dogs. I mean, look at the ASPCA here in America. And all these organizations fighting to protect dogs and other animals for being mistreated. So you have to be, in a sense, radical. You don't want, we should allow 80% of dog to be treated right, and let's say 20% of them to be brutally abused, because we don't want to be radical about that. We don't want 100% protection for dogs. So in the same way, I mean, if you care so much about dogs, and I profoundly care about dogs, then you should obviously also care about protecting the life of fetuses, of human fetuses. And if you don't want to consider it a human, I don't give a damn. It's a life form. And if you care about a dog, you better care about a fetus. I don't care if you think, oh, it's a person, it's not a person. Shut up. You know, just shut up. It's a life form. And you were a fetus once, so what were you before, you know, you became human? What were you? Subhuman? What the hell were you? I don't care. You were a fetus once. So you should show the same respect to that fetus that you would have wished, that you wish that would have been applied to you. Because you were a fetus once, and someone respected you enough to let you live and be born. And now you should show the same respect to all the other fetuses who are wishing to be born as well. But the thing is, you have to be You have to be radical about being. You can't just say I don't judge anyone for being pro-choice. No, no. You have to. You have to judge them, but you also have to. But when you have a lady, a woman who is trapped in a situation where she feels, you know, like her life has been destroyed. Can you imagine the catastrophe that comes upon a woman's life when she realizes, you know, and I get it, it's by choices most of the time that they make, wrong choices. But regardless, like the moment where they realize, oh, my whole life has been upended now because I'm going to have to carry this baby. And then maybe raise it, and I'm going to be a single mother, and all this uproar, and then there's no one talking to them, telling them, hey, you know, first you say this is wrong. If you're what you're about to do is wrong, think about the evil that you're about to commit in terminating a life just because your life has been altered. But at the same time, you know, giving them say we are here for you. We are going to just tough it out, ride it out, ride out the storm for 9 months. And it's going to change your life for 9 months. But you're going to allow a life to exist for 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years. Imagine that. And you're going to give someone the opportunity that was given to you when you were a fetus. You know, that sort of talk. And that's not what the people are hearing. And so it's radicalism, but at the same time, you have to be radical, and stay in the truth, and that's the problem that people always associate radicalism with total lack of empathy or compassion or understanding, and you can be radical and be totally judging against everyone who's opposed to you, but at the same time, you can still show a measure of mercy, understanding, and compassion. But see, when you say it to someone like in the context that we just did, you know, say, "Hey, what you're thinking about doing is evil and wrong," you're denying someone the opportunity that was given to you. And just because of 9 months of inconvenience, you're going to destroy a life that would have lasted, that's going to last 80 or 70 years or less or whatever. Realize the evil that you're about to commit, but at the same time, we understand as a society the upheaval you're experiencing right now. We're here for you. It's going to be just 9 months. That's all. Just tough it out. 9 months. And we're going to provide you the resources that you need and everything so that you can give this life form a chance. And then you can resume your life. And imagine, for example, it's easy for me to say, I guess, but I know the weight of what I'm about to say. I've always found it hypocritical when the pro-life people say, well, we can make exceptions for abortion. And I go, well, really? So you're saying the fetus is going to be punished for the sins of the father? And I understand, you know, if a woman, in the case of rape, that's, I don't know what I said earlier, but that's what I meant. In the case of a rape, that's when abortion should be allowed. That's when some pro-life people kind of compromise and say. And the answer is no, it's still the same thing. It's still the termination of a life form. Unless you have some sort of wisdom from God that tells you that life form is kind of so evil because it's like the spawn of an evil rapist that life form should be terminated. But how do you know that? I mean, how can you know that? And what I would say to someone, if someone said that, is, well, if your God is saying that life form is so evil, it's a, you know, the spawn of an evil man, and it's going to grow up to be evil and all that, then why don't you pray to your God that fetus gets miscarried? You see what I'm saying? Like, let him through his power, work to show that he was not in approval of that baby being allowed to live, and let him, you know, pray for him to kill that thing if that thing is as evil as you think it possibly is. But if it isn't, then we are again committing a crime, a violation by terminating the fetus. So it's not the fetus's fault per se. But then the other thing is, well, I can imagine how horrible it must feel, how disgusting it must feel for a woman to be pregnant with the child of a man who raped her, and to have that reminder every day looking down at her belly and having that disgusting man's baby inside. I can only imagine how horrible that must be. But then I go to the same message. Well, tough it out. Tough it out. I know this was something that was put inside of you against your will. But we have to respect that life form. Just tough it out for 9 months. And then give it away for adoption. I'm not saying keep the baby. Give it away. And then move on with your life, but we're going to be here to support you. See, it's still the same message. It's toughing it out through 9 months. But in the midst of all that, do you think the lady, for example, going back to the case of a young girl who got pregnant because she was being promiscuous and stuff, do you think that after those 9 months, that she's going to go, oh, okay, I'm just going to go get pregnant again. She's going to think twice about her behavior. But because you will have sown into her the awareness, the judgment, that terminating a fetus is evil. You will have helped her, but at the same time have left the seed of that truth in her the termination of a life form like that is evil. So she's going to think twice before she starts sleeping around again. You can't take out the element of judgment. Say, oh, let's stop demonizing things and just be all lovey-dovey and so forth. No, you still have to bring the element of judgment. And then after the judgment, then you work compassion into it. And then the article goes on to talk about, you know, how ridiculous the humanizing of abortion is. Let me just read this, because there's some sort of irony in all of this. And then they quote a priest, Frank Prevone, and you know, these are the priests that call themselves fathers, which I find totally disgusting. You know, you're not my father, so I'm not gonna call you father, you son of a bitch. This so-called father, Frank Prevone, the National Director for Priests for Life, wrote about the real humanization that should be the focus of the abortion conversation. It says here, he said, every child born and unborn is a sacred gift from God, unquote. He said, quote, every human being has an inherent right to life, unquote. Oh, yeah. Wouldn't it be a good idea to put that in the Constitution? You know, the wonderful U.S. Constitution. But I guess our wise founding fathers forgot, but whatever. Then it says here, during his speech, he mentioned the, quote, radical beliefs of the Democrats several times, and among the most important things he stressed was that pro-life politicians have to point out that extremism every chance they get. Quote, they are the radical extremists. We're not the radical extremists, Trump said, unquote. Quote again, politicians have to say that, unquote. Apparently he... I think I'm quoting from Donald Trump, if I'm understanding correctly. So this this son of a bitch who calls himself father of people he has not fathered, Fran Provone, was talking about a speech that Donald Trump gave. So I think I'm quoting Trump, actually, not the son of a bitch so-called father of people he didn't spawn. So Trump is saying they are the radical extremists. We're not the radical extremists. Politicians have to say that. And so it's the same thing again. No, we don't want extremism or radicalism. But the problem is that's exactly what we need, radicalism. That's exactly what we need. And I hope this is the theme in these most recent audio snippets. The fact that people don't understand you have to be, quote, radical. The radical Republicans of the 1860s were the greatest generation of politicians in American history. Unfortunately, they were not able to succeed because of the American people and because of the Democrats and a whole bunch of things and worthless rhinos like son of a bitch Lincoln and so forth. But that's what we need. So it's always, again, this attitude like, oh, they are the extremists. We are the moderates. No. You have to be radical about defending life. And then, as I said, in the midst of that radicalism, it doesn't mean that you become a heartless son of a bitch. It means that you, once you've established the judgment, then if you see a change of heart in the person, then you exercise compassion and understanding and support, because you're saying, I understand what you're going through. I understand why this is so such a tumultuous decision that you're making, but we're here to help you. Just be aware that if you go ahead and do or try to do this, you're trying to do a very evil thing. You are murdering a life form. So there's a, a constant desire not to be extremist. And now, one thing I must say here is, this article goes on to say the second prong. It says this is one of a two-pronged strategy for every pro-life candidate who is facing off against an abortion extremist at every level of government. Let the American people hear again and again how Democrats want abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy paid for by our tax dollars. The second prong is this: show that we are the compassionate people on abortion. We care for the baby, the mother, and the whole family. Trump's support of pregnancy centers and advocacy of streamlined adoption policies are just two examples of this. And so they are kind of saying a little bit of what we're saying right now, but the problem is that they don't say it loudly enough. And so he couldn't quote Trump on this second part, this second prong. He just said President Trump's support of pregnancy centers and advocacy of streamlined adoption policies are just two examples of this, but he couldn't quote him saying that. So, yes, he's in support of that, but he doesn't emphasize that as part of the message. And a more radical answer to this is we have to define the right to life in the U.S. Constitution, because the U.S. Constitution is so poorly written. We have to, if we are radical about and really committed to pro-life, then we have to say we have to define the right to life in the Constitution. And we've talked many times about that and how that includes defending the right to animal, the right to life for animals, for any life form, at different levels, of course. It doesn't mean that we can't eat a hamburger anymore. But yes, we have to understand that the right to life operates through all life forms. And once you establish that, then defending the life of a human fetus is it's going to be very easy to do. But you have to admit, first of all, that the founding fathers were not that bright, and they didn't include the right to life in the Constitution. We need to fix that. And that's the radicalism that would have been needed to truly bring this country truly out of the abortion situation we've been in for so many decades. We're partially out of it in a certain sense, but we never really finished the job. You know, the country's about to die, and we really never finished the job. And we could have finished it with that more radical approach. And I know you, if you're a conservative Christian, your God would have, believe you me, your God would have responded if you had become more radical. And then would there have been a transformation of this country. And a total change of the tone, the cultural tone regarding abortion. You would not need to go around just handing out pamphlets and trying to convince people. If you had listened to the truth and spoken the right message, the atmosphere of the country would have been totally transformed. Totally transformed. And everybody would have become like, have had this epiphany about how evil the termination of a life form called a fetus is. And it would have been a message that would have included the awareness that we need to, that the U.S. Constitution is a stupid document that didn't bother to put the right to life, and we had to work on that. It would have included the awareness that we have to make it like a national thing, that we as a society are going to help help women to go through the inconvenience of the 9 months so that they can give that fetus the chance to live for decades and decades. And it also includes the awareness that as we defend the right of a fetus to live, we all were fetuses, so I keep emphasizing that. You were a fetus. If you're pro-abortion, remember, you were a fetus once. But the thing is that as you protect the life of a fetus, you also have to become aware of protecting all life forms constitutionally at different levels. And it would have been a very comprehensive package. And if we had been radical enough about it in the right way, then the whole atmosphere of the country would have changed regarding the abortion issue. And also, as we shared on the website where these audio snippets are posted, that I despise when the conservative Christians go out, on the warpath, for campaigning for pro-life stuff, because the matriarchal Christian church is constantly committing abortions inside of her, and they're not literal abortions, but they are figurative abortions, where the callings and the power of the people inside the church is constantly aborted because everybody has to become a slave of the matriarchal church system. And anyone who starts rising, in a significant way always has his kneecaps, blown out so that they can remain crippled and inside the matriarchal system. It's like that story in the Bible where Pharaoh said he wanted to kill all the male children. He didn't want to kill the female Jewish, babies. It's all the male babies that had to die. And that's what the matriarchal church does. Whenever someone rises in a male quality, they always chop him down because the female has to rule. And we've described it's not a literal female. It's a figurative female that's the server and the organizer personalities that control the system, and that's what makes it matriarchal. It doesn't depend on whether the people in charge are wearing skirts or not, or kilts or whatever. It doesn't matter what they're wearing, whether they're literal males or females. it is how they behave, and they're constantly aborting anyone who rises up in a male quality. They just go and take him to the Nile and just drown him, and they abort their calling, they abort everything about them. So that's why the American church has been so powerless to change the atmosphere about abortion in America, because they're constantly committing abortion inside the church all the time, all the time. So they have no authority, no power whatsoever to affect any change. And then we have, you know, people, dumb people like Nikki Haley, saying things that, you know, that don't make any sense. And she had a kernel of truth in what she said, but it's wrapped up in the no judgment thing. And that is, remember, the judge personality is one of the three male personalities: judge, visionary, and conqueror. So when she said we don't want to judge anyone, she was effeminizing the issue. She was emasculating the issue, if you catch what I'm saying. She was taking the male component out of it and just leaving the female component, the server. We're going to be here to serve and show compassion to the women and this and that and help them out. And yeah, that's the server personality. But if you take out the judge personality, then you basically sabotaged yourself. So in her statement, she kind of exposed how the Christians are always aborting the male qualities in people. And once you kill the male qualities in people, you destroy their calling. You destroy everything about them. Everything that is left is very superficial. And that's why, you know, the American church has been so powerless in stopping the death of America that's coming very soon. So that's the first thing we wanted to talk about, and I didn't expect it to take this long. And the second thing is just a ridiculous, I'll say this very quickly, I hope. It's a headline that I saw on the Daily Mail, posted on the 28th of August, 2023. And the headline says, Tucker Carlson claims U.S. hates Russia because it's a, quote, Christian country. As rumors swirl, he has approached Putin again for an interview on X platform. And I think this Tucker Carlson is a former Fox News host, and some of you may know about him, so I'm not going to go into too many details about him, but the thing is that he's a well-known, I don't know if I can call him conservative voice, I'm not sure what to call him sometimes, but the thing is that he was speaking at a festival in Hungary. I'm not sure why he was in Hungary, but he was over there in Hungary, he was giving a speech, and that's where he said this. And I don't want to go into the details, but let me just read one paragraph. It says, the former Fox News star told MCC Fest, a social, political, and cultural festival in Hungary. I don't know how to pronounce Fest. It might be Fest. Who knows? I don't speak Hungarian. He told them that Russia is like Hungary in that both are nations, quote, built on Christian precepts, unquote. And then he said, that's enough to incite our policymakers in the United States, and that's exactly why they hate Russia, unquote. And I read that, and I go, oh my goodness. This is what conservatism does to people. The stupidity. Because the liberals are supporting Ukraine against Russia, then Russia becomes the good guy to the conservatives. And now Russia and Putin are like these heroes fighting against the liberals. And this Tucker Carlson idiot doesn't understand that in Russia, you can't go out on the streets and preach. If you are a Christian, you want to go to Russia and you stand on a city corner, street corner, and start preaching the gospel, you're going to get arrested. Because you are only allowed to preach Christianity inside a church building, and it has to, you have to go through certain things to get it authorized. You don't have freedom of religion, so it's all very controlled. The churches in Russia are very controlled by Putin, and they have to kind of temper their message. You can't go around preaching to people out on the streets because you can get arrested for that. And then this Tucker Carlson idiot is telling these people Russia is built on Christian precepts and is a, quote, Christian nation. So now Putin is a white knight defending Christianity. The same guy who goes around murdering every political opponent, anyone who speaks out against him gets killed by him, and he's now the champion of Christianity. So that tells you, you know, that's why I know the country's gone. The level of stupidity and doubling down on it as the country's dying, instead of saying, oh, you know, trying to wake up before it's too late, it's like, no. It's like someone who is drowning, but instead of trying to get out of the water, is trying to go down deeper in the water. That's what these people are doing. Now, the other headline that I wanted to share, just as a side note, is it's on the Daily Mail again. It was posted on the 28th of August, and it says U.S. Open Roundup. It says U.S. Open Roundup. Eighth-seeded Maria Sakkari, not sure where she's from. Maria Sakkari complains about weed smoke wafting in from the crowd in upset loss as number four seed Holger Rune is stunned by Spain's car, whatever. But what I wanted to share was that this the U.S. Open is being played. I really don't follow it that much sport anymore, but. I think the U.S. Open, the Tennis Open, is being played in New York as we speak. And so this lady was playing over there in Flushing, in Queens. And she was complaining about the smell of cannabis during the match. And supposedly, it says in the article that it's a smoke-free zone. You know, the stadium where she was playing, you're not allowed to smoke anything, whether it be a cigarette or cannabis. But apparently someone was, and she was complaining about it. And she said, quote, "The smell, oh my gosh," Sakkari said to the chair umpire in the first set, quote, "It was weed." And that's just an example of, you know, the collapse of this country. Now the embarrassment that in a major tournament, now she got a taste of what I have to experience every time I go to New York, the stench of cannabis, you know, all over the place. Now, you know, this is just an example of a little taste of why this country is on its way to dying. We have become, we are a short time away from becoming a third world country. What a shame and embarrassment that this lady had to endure that in the middle of a match, supposedly playing in a modern, civilized first world country, which is no longer the case. The other thing that we wanted to talk about is very quickly. It's another headline from the Daily Mail posted on the 29th of August of 2023. It says Idalia. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. How people are pronouncing it, to be frank. So I'm just gonna make it up as I go along. Idalia could be the strongest storm to hit the Florida Big Bend for a century as it officially becomes a hurricane. 14 million people are placed under severe weather warnings ahead of 150 mile per hour winds and 12 foot storm surge. Hurricane Idalia is due to hit Florida in the night to Wednesday as a Category 3 hurricane. This hurricane Idalia, if that's how you pronounce it, hit Florida in the night of the 29th of August. And I find that very curious and very interesting because the 29th of August, every time that date comes, I always remember that's when Katrina hit Louisiana, New Orleans. So on the anniversary would be the 18th anniversary of Katrina hitting New Orleans, the truth sent this hurricane into Florida to hit Florida. And apparently it's done a lot of damage. I haven't really, for some reason, I haven't felt led to follow the story on this. This is a 2-day old article. But the reason why I wanted to bring this up is, first of all, this connection to the 29th of August. Second, is the fact this storm is hitting from right, from left to right. And it's kind of the same thing that happened with the other storm that hit Southern California a while ago. It's like these two things hitting both sides of the coast at the, you know, around the same time, in the same more or less, you know, time period, and both going kind of like almost vertically from right, from left to right, from, in other words, from west to east. And see the natural flow of everything, you know, in the atmosphere, including hurricanes, is always from east to west. And I think that's because of the rotation of the Earth. I'm not sure exactly why, but I think that's what causes, that's why the air patterns are always from east to west. But these, both of these have been from west to east, like going in the opposite direction, almost vertically, but, you know, in the opposite direction that you'd normally expect. And I think this was to emphasize, it's like someone saying, I am cutting off the country at both ends. And to show that this is not some sort of haphazard weather phenomenon, I'm going to make it happen in the non-expected way, from left to right instead of from right to left, which is the natural flow of hurricanes. And I find that's not a coincidence. And the other thing I wanted to mention about Idalia is that I was curious, how do you, you know, what does Idalia mean? And I went to look it up, and I found something at Nameberry. Berry is, you know, the fruit. Nameberry.com. And it says here, the name Idalia is a girl's name of Italian origin, meaning behold the sun. It says here, a pretty, if unusual, choice for a summer baby, particularly a girl with an ancestor named Ida. An epithet of the goddess Aphrodite, Idalia is derived from the Greek place named Idalion. And then it says that, finally, Idalia is currently attracting more attention after being featured in the Netflix series From Scratch. And when I read that, I said, oh my goodness, interesting. Because that's what we were being told as a country to do, to start from scratch, to wipe off the foundation we had so much relied on it and put our faith in, the foundation of quote, our founding fathers and the Constitution and all that crap. And we were being told just let it go and start from scratch and build a new foundation, a true righteous foundation based on the truth, where the truth is king. And we said, hell no, we're not going to do it. So that's why Idalia is coming. And I know the connection to a series called From Scratch is not a coincidence. And then the fact that it says behold, that the name of it means behold the sun, is also not a coincidence. The sun represents righteousness, and it's like a king, you know, standing up above on the sky, ruling over the earth. So it is a figure of righteousness and truth, being king over the land, shining over the land. And that's what Idalia is saying. Behold the sun. That's what we were supposed to do as a nation. Look up to the truth and put the truth as king over the land and let it reign and shine over us. But we said, no, we don't want the truth to be king. We want Benjamin Franklin to be our king. We want Madison to be our king. We want George Washington and Thomas Jefferson to be our king and the U.S. Constitution to be our king. And that's why we are dying as a nation. And it didn't mean that we were going to just destroy the good things that were done in this country. We were just going to make them permanently better, raise them to a higher level, and preserve them for future generations, but doing it the right way. It's the same principle. You know, if you hold on to your life, you're going to lose it. If you let it go, you're going to save it. And we were holding on to these few things. Yes, because there were some good things, and I say that in quotes, in a qualified way. There were some good things in the Constitution and the way the system was established. There were some good things. But we said, but with the good things, there were a lot of bad things. And because we were enamored with the good things, we held on to the whole thing. And we had to kind of start from scratch. And we had started from scratch. All the wonderful things that you loved about America, its freedom, its democracy, its capitalism, all these things would have been preserved if you had just let it go for a second. Just let it go, man. Let's start from scratch. Just like Abraham, you know, in the Bible, it says, you know, he was willing to let go of Isaac and kill him. Because it says in the Bible that in his mind, he said, and God is capable of resurrecting him from the dead. It's like, let it go. And I know I'm going to get him back. And that's what we had to do as a nation. I'm saying this to conservative Christians who should, I mean, they read their Bible all the time, but apparently they don't believe in it. They don't live it out. They don't understand it. They don't talk to that God. If he exists, they don't talk to him. They don't just don't talk to him. The thing is that if we had just let it go and been willing to start from scratch and behold the sun and not Benjamin Franklin, not George Washington, not all these people, then we would have been rescued. But because of it, then we're dying. And that's why, I mean, that's why I believe Idalia showed up in Florida. And why Florida? You know, first there's the storm Hillary hitting Southern California from right to left, kind of in a knife-like motion up Southern California. And then almost in a parallel motion from right to left, all going vertically up Florida, we have Idalia now, and so first it hits, you know, the hard, you know, the place that is so known for its radical leftist liberalism, on the left coast, the west coast, and then we have Idalia now hitting the east coast in Florida, which is now considered the heartland of a stronghold of conservatism, right-leaning conservatism in America. So the left has been hit, the right has been hit. As if to say, you know, yes, I am upset with the left, but just to show you, I'm also upset with the conservatives. The conservatives were supposed to behold the sun and start from scratch. And they were unwilling to, and that's why the devastation and the death of the country is coming. And just to emphasize the stubbornness of the country, I'm just going to read very quickly. I found this article on NOQ Report, which always redirects you to AmericaFirstReport.com. So at this NOQReport.com website, there's an article posted on the 25th of August, 2023, by Alasdair MacLeod from Gold Money. I don't know. what gold money is, and must be an organization or a company. Who knows? The thing is that the article is called "Hedging the End of Fiat," and I'm just going to read the first paragraph or two. It's slowly coming clear that the fiat dollar's hegemony is drawing to a close. That's what the BRICS summit in Johannesburg is all about. Rats, if you like, deserting the dollar's ship. With the dollar's backing being no more than a precarious faith in it, it is bound to be sold down by foreign holders. Being only fiat, it could even become valueless, threatening to take down the other Western alliance fiat currencies as well. How do you protect your paper wealth from this outcome? Some swear by Bitcoin and others by gold. So then he starts talking, and it's a long article. It doesn't really matter, the details. But what angers me about this is the arrogance and it just this constant. It's like an insult, fiat currency, and it's one of the things that we've talked about, this stupidity of holding on to the gold standard, believing that the gold standard is the real money. It's one of the many things that the conservatives hold on to. It's one of the things that brought down the Reconstruction. We talked about that briefly. The Panic of 1873 was caused because Grant foolishly held on to the gold standard. That's what led to the Panic of 1873. We had growth during the 1860s, ironically, because in the middle of the Civil War and afterwards, because the Civil War forced us to get away from the gold standard, start issuing a paper currency, the so-called evil fiat currency, the greenbacks as they were called, because we couldn't depend on gold anymore because we needed to have money circulating in the economy to produce, what was needed to win the war against the terrorists in the South. But the thing is that and then Grant said, no, let's stop that. And he went back to the gold standard, and that led to the Panic of 1873, just brought the economy down. And then the next year, 1874, the idiot Americans voted the Democrats into power by an overwhelming turnaround, overwhelming in the House. And that's when, that's what marked the beginning of the end of Reconstruction. And then the oppression of black people for almost 100 more years after that. So the thing is that in the South, so the thing is that conservatives keep holding on to that. And it kept being the problem even after Reconstruction. This total obsession. Rutherford B. Hayes was also obsessed with the gold standard and so forth. And I think the future Republican presidents continued with that nonsense of the gold standard. So they keep just using that little, like an insult, fiat. And I go, and this shows why the country is dying. Conservatives are too stubborn in their understanding. They're not willing to listen to the truth, saying to them, your understanding of the economy is wrong. And the ironic thing about this fiat thing, fiat means, by faith. You just take it by faith that this dollar is worth something. But the problem is that these people, these conservative idiots, don't understand that gold is the same thing. It's a fiat currency. And you go, well, what do you mean by that? Well, see, think about this. If you have a lot of money, and I have nothing against buying gold per se, especially in this in the broken system, some people might feel led to do that, and I wouldn't say don't do it or do it. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that on principle we should not be operating by associating money with gold or tying it to gold or having gold become the backing of money. That is the system. That is a flawed paradigm that leads to a lot of problems. But within the current broken, corrupt system that we have right now, that might be for some people the best choice. I don't know. I wouldn't advise. I wouldn't advise either way. It really doesn't matter. But within the broken system, you might have to do what you have to do. I understand that. But my point is that the paradigm is wrong. But let's say, for example, that you want to, you're worried about inflation, so you take $50,000 that you have in your savings and you buy gold with it. So now you have $50,000 less. You know, they're not in your bank account. You can't use that to buy food, clothing, pay your mortgage or whatever, or buy the, or pay the rent or all your necessities. You can't. So now instead of $50,000 that would have bought you hamburgers and clothes and heating and electricity, now you have a whole bunch of gold. That's all you have, like a ton of gold. Well, not a ton, but you know what I mean. A whole bunch of gold just sitting there right next to you. You can't eat the gold. You can't wear the gold. You can't use the gold to heat your house, literally at least. I mean, you can sell it off and then, but then you have to turn it back into the evil fiat currency to, you know, to pay the your bills and whatever. But as it stands, you can't use it for anything. It's just sitting there. So you have deprived yourself of real tangible goods that will benefit you, and now you have this piece of metal, this whole hunk of metal sitting right next to you. Now you go, well, now my money is safe. That's how people see it. But why is it safe? Because now they have a fiat. Fiat means faith, if I'm understand correctly in Latin, I think. Now you have faith that whenever you need money to buy food, I mean, let's say you run out of money, now you only have the gold. Now how can you go eat and continue living if all you have is gold? Well, you have the faith that you can take that gold and sell it off to some other sucker who will pay you with the evil fiat currency so that you can go to Wendy's and buy your hamburger. You know, because you can't show up at Wendy's with a bar of gold and say, you know, give me, you know, 100 hamburgers for this bar of gold. They will take the fiat currency. But the thing is, you have to believe that someone will value that gold enough so that you can sell it to them, and they will give you the money that you can use to buy your food. So you're trusting, you're having a fiat that other people will value the gold as much as you do, and maybe even more in terms of absolute money, dollar value, you know, because the gold always seems to be going up and up and up. So, and why is it going up and up? Because everybody else is saying, I trust gold. I trust gold. I trust gold. So everybody's putting their faith in gold, and therefore gold is valuable. It's fiat currency as well. See, real money is what you can use to exchange for other goods and services. If we take it, for example, we've talked about this before, but just to say it one more time in a different way, or maybe we've already said it this way, but let's say it one more time, if so. The best way to understand what money really is by taking it out in your mind and doing a mind experiment of what a society would how the current economic transactions would happen if money was not there. So, like, let everything be the same. Let's just take money out of it for a second. It's ironic. To understand money, you have to get rid of it in your mind. And that's how you then understand what money really is. So you take money out. So now we have an economy where everything is barter, you know, literal. You know, you exchange literal goods and services. Instead of exchanging money, you exchange goods and services. So now you're a farmer and you have all these sheep, and you're breeding the sheep and so forth. So now you want a hamburger, so you take the sheep
And now you have to go to Wendy's and put the sheep on the counter and say, hey, I'm bringing this sheep, and I want 250 hamburgers in exchange for the sheep. Or, I don't know, maybe 50 hamburgers, so let's say. I don't know. So you leave the sheep and you take your 50 hamburgers and go home. Now you can feed your family for a few days just eating the hamburgers. And now, the person who took the sheep at Wendy's can now shear the sheep to get wool out of it, to knit a sweater, or they can kill the sheep and make sheep hamburgers. I don't know if those things exist, but they're going to eat the sheep. So the sheep, why did the guy at Wendy's take the sheep? Because the sheep produced tangible benefits. You know, it was good for producing clothes, and for producing, food on the table. So there was a fair exchange there. Now, what happens if the guy, the farmer who had 50 sheep, now, you know, the sheep keep breeding and now he has 75 sheep. Now that means that he can take more sheep to Wendy's and buy more hamburgers. And maybe he can use the hamburgers as currency. You know, he's not going to eat all the hamburgers, but he's going to take the hamburgers and then go back to his house and then say, oh, I want to buy a sweater. So he goes to the neighbor who has the sweater and say, I'm going to give you 3 hamburgers or 5 hamburgers. You give me the sweater. So the hamburgers become the currency, you could say, at that point. But the thing is that as all of this is happening, if he has more sheep, he has more hamburgers he can get from Wendy's that he can trade for other things. So as you can see, I hope, is that, and the thing is, now that he's bringing more sheep to Wendy's, now Wendy's can hire more people to make more hamburgers because he has more sheep that he can use to pay them with. Let's say that he uses some of the sheep to pay the workers there. Now he has more sheep he's getting from the farmer. He can hire more people, and they will accept the work at Wendy's because they're going to see the sheep bleeding away there, right there in front of them, and say, oh yeah, I'm going to be paid. I'm going to be able to take the sheep home and eat it as payment for my work at Wendy's. So see, economic activity is growing. The farmer is richer, and he's triggering economic activity all over the place. But see, I haven't talked about gold for 1 second. In that situation, when he got 25 more sheep from 50 to 75, his money supply increased, didn't it? Because now he can buy more things. And and it's not imaginary, it's real. It's a tangible sheep, you know, that he's producing and taking to Wendy's in exchange for food that he can then use to buy other things from other people. So wouldn't you agree that the money supply has increased, at least in that farmer's household, by 50%, you know, from 50 to 75? The money supply, not only in his house, but in the entire town, has increased. Because now there's more sheep, and it's just creating more economic activity. It's more money circulating in the economy in the form of sheep and hamburgers. And did the money supply increase because somebody found gold? I haven't mentioned gold at any point. See, gold doesn't, it matters diddly squat in that situation, because I can't eat gold. But the money supply has increased, even though no one has found more gold. The problem is that if you tie the money supply to gold, then you're saying, I can't increase the money supply unless I find more gold, which is such a stupid and artificial restriction. The money supply increases when there's more goods and services that can be exchanged, because money at the end of the day, is nothing but a point system to facilitate the transactions. It's a point system. A point system that should reflect the goods and services circulating in the economy. Therefore, the money supply has to be tied to the growth in GDP. As the GDP grows, we need more money circulating to reflect the new availability of goods and services in the economy. And if you don't allow the money supply to grow, you stifle economic activity because the money no longer reflects what goods and services are circulating in that economy. It's such a simple thing when you see it. It's so clear. Gold has nothing to do with the money supply. We tied gold to the money supply in history because our economic activity was so backward before the Industrial Revolution that there was so much gold compared to the goods and services being produced that gold could act as a sort of fiat currency. That was the fiat currency. It was a way of proving, yeah, if you are rich, you will be able to buy gold because gold is so scarce. It became a way to validate that you really are wealthy in some sort of crazy way. But then the English came along, and the English changed the world with the Industrial Revolution. The British came and changed the world and transformed it with the Industrial Revolution that totally transformed economic productivity in Britain and around the world. The whole world's economy was transformed by the English. And when that happened, the gold standard became obsolete. It was an artificial placeholder that was there for a while. And when it ran its course, we had to let go of it. But conservatives in 2023 are still holding on to this stupid idea. That's how backwards conservatives are. And that's why the country is dying. And especially here in America, I'm seeing these articles over and over again about the gold standard and the fiat currency and blah, 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 blah. And it almost feels like they are listening to the audio snippets and trying to react to it. And in a certain sense, I feel like they are listening to them. Maybe not literally, but in a figurative sense, it's as if they're hearing the truth saying, "You morons, you morons." And they go, "No, no, we're not morons. We are geniuses. And we're going to hold on to our stupidity and call it wisdom until our dying breath." Charlton Heston said, "You're going to pry this rifle from my cold, dead fingers." And that's how they're holding on to these old ideas. And that's why the country is dying. And I just needed to mention that. And just as another article on NOQReport.com posted on the 31st of August, in other words, the day before this recording, the title of it is "Gold is Natural Money, Fiat is Fake" by Michael Mahari, whatever. Gold is natural money, fiat is fake. And I just explained, and I hope it made sense. Gold is also fiat currency because you're trusting that someone will, when you really need the money to buy food, when you really need a hamburger, someone will find the gold bars that you're holding as valuable and will give you actual money to buy a hamburger with it. You'll be able to sell it off. Because if you invested $50,000 in a certain metal, in this case gold, and then suddenly somebody said, "Oh, gold is evil, gold is radioactive," let's say, just to give a theoretical example, or for some reason society said we don't like gold anymore, then you just lost $50,000 because now you're sitting on a pile of metal that no one wants. See what I'm saying? So you're trusting, it's a fiat thing, you're trusting that someone will take your gold bars and give you actual money to buy food with it. But if they find gold to be, for some reason, loathsome, they don't want to have anything to do with gold anymore, then you just lost $50,000 and you have a useless pile of metal sitting in front of you. But they're doubling down on this. And I'm reading these articles again on gold, 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 gold. And that's why the country's dying, the stubbornness. And just as a side note, I do feel the need to say this, and I'm getting the feeling we may be able to get to the second person we wanted to talk about, but I saw this story, and it really broke my heart. It says January 6th, mother of eight fears years in prison. It's a story about one of the, people who were at the January 6th protests in Washington in 2021. And she's going to be put in jail. She's afraid that she's going to be put in jail for a long time. She's been confined to a small space for 2.5 years already. And she's a regular mom. And I saw another story of this lady who, she was accused, she broke a window in the Capitol building, but if you read the story, it just explains why she did it. She was right next to one of the guys who got shot by the evil corrupt DC police, probably the most corrupt police force in America right now. The guy got shot in the face, and the bullet went through his cheeks. I mean, can you imagine that? She was standing right near him, and when she saw that, she was horrified. She started running because she was trying to look for cover. And in the story, it's on uncoverdc.com, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the exact article for that, but I remember reading it. It's heartbreaking because she's trying to find a way to escape, and that's why she broke the glass in the window because she was trying to find a way inside this place because she was seeking shelter, cover from the police. They were throwing tear gas at the people and shooting and all these things, and she was just trying to find a way, a safe place to go into. And now she probably is going to get, I think, I don't know if she got or will get like 10, 15 years in jail. There was another guy who got, I heard recently, 18 years in jail. All he did was walk into the building, and that was it. And this mother of eight's gonna, already been, been trapped like a political prisoner, a Soviet political prisoner since, for 2.5 years, it's very, I think I'm actually talking about the same person here, the two stories that I was saying. She's the one who grabbed a bullhorn and broke a window. And this is the story, actually, yes, that describes what happened to her. And you may want to read it. It's the title of it is J6: Mother of Eight Fears Years in Prison by Wendy Strauch, S-T-R-A-U-C-H, Strauch, I'm not sure how she pronounces it, Mahoney, and it was posted on September 1st, the day of this recording, 2023, the day before this recording. This recording is being done on the 2nd of September. I lose track of the days now. This just shows the state of the country, that we are becoming a third world banana republic. And the sad thing is that the GOP people in Washington are doing nothing about this. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. The Republicans, including the supposed conservatives, they could be passing legislation to block all of this. Because see, the judges, that's one thing that I think we don't understand. The judges are here to uphold the law, and that's, again, who's to blame? The Constitution and the stupid founding fathers who didn't establish the true nature of the judicial branch. Clearly, it was just so ambiguous that it's become a disaster. but the judicial system is supposed to uphold the laws passed by the legislature. So if the legislature decides to pass a law to protect the rights of people, then the judges have to uphold it. The judges can't say, oh, the hell with you. We rule and we say this is the way it is. No, the legislative branch can overturn it. And they could pass legislation. And you could argue, well, the House can pass it, but it's going to get you know, killed by the Senate because it has to be approved by both houses. And whose fault is that? The Founding Fathers, who established the Senate, this very destructive system that prevents any real change happening because you have these two colliding forces constantly clashing with each other. And a Senate that requires a supermajority to pass anything because of the... It is a mess. It's a disaster system. It's a disastrous system. But the thing is that at least they should be making an effort, even if the Senate, you know, doesn't approve the bill. I don't care. The House should at least pass legislation to vindicate these people. These people are going to suffer and be in jail for years and decades for no reason. And they're being treated like rubbish. The abuse they're getting is worse than third world. I mean, this is tyrannical abuse that's happening to American citizens. And Donald Trump is not doing a thing about it. He's saying, oh, I'm going to get elected and then I'm going to pardon them. You should have, and as we've said a million times before, he should have been sitting outside the gulag, the D.C. gulag prison, and protesting with a bullhorn. And saying, I'm not going to leave until you let these people go or until you let us visit them and film the conditions you have them in and show the world how you're treating them. And if you're going to put me in jail, put me in jail. I dare you. I double dare you to put me in jail. And that's what I would have done if I had been in Donald Trump's position. But he didn't do it. And I'm sure a lot of people have advised him, don't get too close to these people because... See, everybody thinks that you are the one who instigated some sort of insurrection. And if you do that, then you're going to be linked to them and be seen, yes, validate this image of the leader of some crazy insurrection, treacherous insurrection. So he stayed away from it. It's like, oh, I do more by becoming president. And then, you know, as president, I have the power to change things. He was president, quote unquote, and I say that in quotes, for 4 years. And look at how well he controlled everything. When the plandemic, or how I call it the pandemic, because we all were turned into pandas, the pandemic happened. He had no control over it, the lockdowns and the mandates and everything. He was the president of the United States, so-called, and the most powerful man in the free world, quote-unquote. And he did nothing. Because he was just listening to everybody and just following like a little idiot, so if he ever got back to the White House, he'd be the same idiot again. Because he hasn't changed a bit, hasn't changed anything. He doesn't regret a damn thing he's done, or that he did. Doesn't regret a damn thing. I can tell you, he does not regret a single thing he did during his 4 years. Not a single thing. A man completely unrepentant, if you put him back in the White House, he's going to do the same thing. And he's going to get run over just like he did the first time. And he's not going to get those people out of out of prison. Or if he does, it's going to be in a very half-assed way. But see, the radicals are not in the country. They're not here. If Trump had been a radical, that's what he would have done. He would have fought for these people. Real, you know, down in the trenches, fought for these people. These people who sacrificed themselves for him. Because they were there protesting for him. And but he didn't. He never returned the favor. Because he was not radical enough to do it, and he's trying to play it moderate, trying to show that he's not a radical, and that's why he doesn't deserve another chance. And that's why the country is dying. And I feel sorry for these people also, that they were there putting their fiat, their faith, in a man who doesn't deserve to be defended. And I feel sorry for them. And the sad thing is, you know, these people are not... What if January 6th was a coordinated insurrection to try to overthrow the government, overthrow the election? It was the most stupid insurrection I've ever seen. You know, people showing up dressed, you know, in patriot, revolutionary times, you know, garments, and going in, and first of all, they were being let in by police. The police opened the doors. The guards opened the doors to let them in. They were walking around, and that's all they were doing. They didn't go in and storm the Bastille like, you know, like in 1789 in France. They didn't go in and try to kill the congressmen and so forth. It was just a whole bunch of people protesting. That's all they did. Just walking in. They were let in. They just started walking around. And now it's seen as a planned insurrection. You know, you have to be a moron to think that. I feel sorry for these people who put their trust in a man and a system that was not worth defending anymore. They believed that America was still this constitutional republic, and that their protests would be, you know, this wonderful civic moment in history, in American history, and the restoration of our values, and blah blah blah. And they put their faith in this false foundation, and look at the consequences. They didn't realize the American Republic had already been dead for 13 years, or 12 years at that time. The American Republic died on the 5th of November, 2008. We've been running on fumes. It's like been given the chance for all this time to just start a new republic under a new constitution, a new system. But they didn't understand that. These conservatives don't understand that it's over, baby. It's over. We needed to start from scratch, but we didn't want to. We held on to these sacred cows. And we're dying, and the sacred cows will still be alive, which is so sad. And in a certain way, the sacred cows, I would dare say, in a certain way, have already died, and they're rotting away, but we treat them like they're alive, which is so sad. It's like, you know, holding on to a relative, like someone who has his parents die in their house, and they don't want to admit that the parents have died, and the parents are rotting away, sticking up the house. But they go, no, daddy's still here. You know, that reminds me of some movie, maybe Psycho, or I don't know, where I've heard that storyline. But it's, yeah, you're holding on to a cadaver. The cadaver's rotting away, and you still prop it up thinking, it's alive, my daddy hasn't died yet. And the founding fathers are long dead. The republic they left behind has crumbled and disappeared, died 15 years ago, close to 15 years ago, but conservatives still don't want to admit it. And they blame everyone but themselves. And as I've said a million times, yes, the liberals are the ones doing the destruction. But the real cause of them doing the destruction is are the conservatives who have enabled it. And that's why we are where we are. As a quick note, I've been hearing about this singer, Oliver Anthony, the one who sang the song that shot to number one. He's been showing up all over the place. There was another article on him where he was saying that his statements were misconstrued, that he's not a bite me supporter and this and that and the other, and he was on the Joe Rogan show. There's a fellow named Joe Rogan who has this show, kind of radio type show, and he was there and he was quoting the Bible and talking about his life experience and now he was saved, and this and that and the other. But so but still, you know, it's ironic. This guy, and I don't question, you know, his, you know, the fact that he had a difficult life and he had this, so, you know, repentance and change. I'm nothing against that per se, but the sad thing is that but in the midst of all of that, and his all his Bible quoting and all that stuff, he still has been saying things that only a moron would say. And the sad thing is that we've been propping him up as he is one of the kind of the symbols of the country having this whatchamacallit terminal lucidity situation, where every now and then we see something that that gives some people hope that the country's not dead. And this guy went with his number one songs. Oh yeah, it's like the country's coming back, and traditional values and this are being you know, raised up to the top once again. He's one of these many terminal lucidity signs of hope that people have tried to cling on to convince themselves that the country is not dying very soon. But he's all over the place. He just says a whole bunch of stuff. And at the end of the day, what he is a, I don't know if the word is naturalist, but he just wants to go back to Arcadia. That's what I get from him. After reading through all of the mumbo jumbo that I hear from him, is that he's just a person who wants to return to Arcadia. That's what I call it. This idyllic pastoral place, you live in a small community where everybody loves each other and everybody says hi to their neighbors and they all care for each other. If Billy Bob is sick, then Bobby Joe and Billy Tom are going to show up to and visit him at his house and bring him some food and stuff and care for each other. It's not going to be the federal government providing support. It's the community supporting each other, that sort of thing. And I think that's where conservatives might be heading in many ways, this isolationism, just this living in this little bubble where you are not being affected by the evil federal government, and you live in this little island of love and kumbaya tranquility, and that's all he has to offer. And the sad thing is that you know, we've been propping him up, and he's all over the place and all over the map in terms of his all the comments, because he's trying to prove that he's not with anyone, but he doesn't really have anything really transformative to say, anything that will help, that would have helped in some way to wake up the country and get it out of its impending death. He's calling people to really not be, it's ironic, but he's calling people not to be radical in a very subtle and sinister way, I would say. He's calling people not to be radical. He's saying, you know, just go back to the simplistic life, and let's not be left or right. I'm a centrist, you know, it's all just to stop dividing each other and having this division and all this conflict and focusing on the things that separate us instead of uniting and blah blah blah. I think we're not going to get to, or we may get to the guy, the second guy, but let me say this very quickly. I do want to read this. I wish I had more information on this, but I, for some reason, I found this interesting article, or a very brief article or page. It's one paragraph, really. I found it on prophecyindex.org. Prophecyindex, one word, .org, O-R-G. And the title of the page, shall we say, is Daniel Webster's Prophecy of America. And this page was posted on the 22nd of January, 2015. So it's more than 8 years ago. But the prophecy or whatever was from much earlier, because as you know, you may know, Daniel Webster was a prominent American back in the 19th century, politician and so forth, and a very well-known man back in the day. And to those who study American history, it's a well-known name. And I'm going to read the paragraph here. It says, The prophecy about America by Daniel Webster comes at a time when he was only months from death at age 70. In summary, the prophecy speaks of how if America holds to God, it will succeed and be blessed. If it doesn't, it will be destroyed, never to rise again. Okay, so that's the fellow summary of Daniel Webster's prophecy. I wish I had more detail. Maybe it's somewhere online, but I didn't look it up enough with enough diligence to find it. But I guess this is a brief summary. But what bothers me is what comes afterwards. What he add the fellow who wrote this adds afterwards, and that's what I want to read. It says, "At present, America, as it was originally founded and formed, no longer exists." Now, this was posted in 2015. So this was 7 years after the American Republic died on the 5th of November, 2008. Oh, and by the way, 5th of November, 2008 is, you know, the day that it became official that Barack Hussein al-Bashir had won the election. Now, interestingly, the Bashir has been popping up on the news a lot recently, and a lot of his homosexual things have been coming out, and there have been people coming out saying, you know, he would visit homosexual bathhouses and homosexual clubs. So the guy is engages in homosexuality. That's what he is. That's what he has chosen to be. And as we all know, Michelle has been rumored for a long time to really be a Michael. If you know what I mean, and what happened with Joan Rivers, the famous comedian in America, when somebody was asking her something about transsexuals, and then she said, "Well, don't you realize we already have a tranny in the White House? It's Michelle." And that's what she said, but she was saying it in a positive kind of leftist sense, but she was saying something that shocked the person who was, she was being kind of interviewed on the street, you know, like an ad hoc interview by someone. So she just made that quick comment and went and walked away. But she basically said she knew that, Michelle al-Bashir was a tranny, you know, short for transsexual. And a short time later, Joan Rivers was dead. It was some sort of botched operation. I forget the details, but it was an unnatural death and was like, quote, an accident. And she died. So we all know. But it's interesting that he's been surfacing so much. And now we have some idiot, some guy who went to school with him, actually, and who knew about his homosexuality tendencies. Wayne Allen Root, who's a well-known conservative that I've often criticized. But the thing is that he went to school with him, he knew him personally and all that, he knew about his homosexuality, and went to university with him. I forget which university. But the thing is that he kept saying, well, we have been living, this is Obasser's third term, so they keep just, like Bite Me is just a puppet for al-Bashir, who's running things behind the scenes. And the sad thing is, these people don't realize al-Bashir is an empty vessel. He's not running anything. I mean, he's too lazy to run anything. It's other people. But it's interesting that al-Bashir has been popping up. It just as America's about to die. He's on the news now. He was in the U.S. Open recently, you know, the same place where the cannabis could be smelled. I'm not sure if it was him smoking it. Who knows? And he has a history of smoking cannabis openly, you know, and he brags about it in his book and autobiography and all this stuff. So, but it's interesting, he's been coming up on the news as America's dying because he's part of the death process that this country has gone into. So going back to this Daniel Webster prophecy, when this fellow, I'm not sure what his name is, the person who runs this website, when he said this, he was showing some sort of enlightenment, like awareness of the truth. He says, "A present America as it was originally founded and formed no longer exists." The problem is with the rest of the paragraph. What remains is the aftermath of that destruction, a communist, socialist, police state dictatorship in the guise of old America, but not the actual nation anymore that was created and envisioned by the founders. That nation is officially dead. As such, the cursing part of this prophecy has been fulfilled. So the guy, this conservative Christian, clearly, idiotically misunderstood the whole thing, even though he had one part of the truth. And that's just a typical thing with conservatives. They always have one bit of truth, and then they lose everything else. Just like Nikki Haley. Let's not demonize abortion. Yeah, there's a kernel of truth in that. But then they, whatever they add to fill the void to complete their message is just rubbish. So it's the same thing with this guy. At present, America as it was originally founded and formed no longer exists. See, the thing is, he doesn't understand that was actually, in a very ironic way, a good thing. Because it's as if the truth was saying, you don't want to terminate this republic voluntarily, I will terminate it involuntarily. Boom. It's dead. Okay, now can you please wake up to what I'm saying to you and react to it? Establish a new republic built on better and more perfect principles. And this idiot conservative, and I'm sorry to call him that, but that's what he is at the end, and I feel bad for him. But I feel that he is a very stubborn man, so I have to call him an idiot to confront his stubbornness. This guy and all the other conservatives just doubled down and said, no, we want to bring back that republic. They didn't understand that we were being given a chance to build a new foundation. The old one had to die, but he sees that as a fulfillment of the curse. The curse did not get fulfilled in 2008 when the actual nation that was created and envisioned by the founders died. That's not when the curse was fulfilled. The curse is about to be fulfilled in a short time from now. That's when the curse will be fulfilled. Because we actually had to get away from the founding fathers to save the nation. See, Daniel Webster's basically said here, it says here, if America holds to God, it will succeed and be blessed. If it doesn't, it will be destroyed, never to rise again. So America had to look to the truth. America had to look to the truth. And America didn't. America kept looking, at least the conservative part, at the founding fathers. And that's why we're dying. It's just, it just reminds me of that phrase from that famous movie, you know, what we've got here is failure to communicate. And that's what we have. You know, the truth has been trying to communicate to America. And America just doesn't get the message. It just gets all garbled because the receptors in the conservative brains just don't process it. They just don't process it. That's why the country is dying. And I keep saying that over and over again. And yes, the death is fast approaching. And I feel this weight of sadness and death over me. especially today. It was a very beautiful day outside today, or yesterday, the day before this recording. And I was sitting outside and looking at the Hudson River, looking at the Manhattan skyline, and watching people around. And but there was it was a beautiful day. Everything was nice. There was, there was like this dark cloud hanging in the background. I can't quite explain it. There's just darkness hanging in the background, despite the apparent niceness of the outside. And I said to myself, it's like no one is aware that the country is about to die. And it's going to happen very soon. And it's inevitable. There's no way we're going to wake up from this. It's just, we're just counting down to the official, time of death. Because this patient just will not recover. And the family members who could do something, to bring this comatose patient back to life, just say, no, 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 no. We know what we're doing. We know what we're doing. We'll just keep doing more of the same. And that's why we're going downhill. And I think we didn't get to the second person. But we will get to him for sure in the next recording. I do believe the next recording without fail has to talk about him. He's a man who lived around the same time as Thaddeus Stevens. He actually was born later, so he died later as well. But he was a 19th century figure. Not too well known, actually. When I mentioned his name, you might associate him with something else. But many people don't know him. I would bet that if I go out on the streets and say, who was so-and-so, they would think it's something else and not the 19th century figure that we will talk about. But he was very well known and very relevant in American history, shall we say, because of the position he held. At least in the 19th century, he was well known, at least in the latter part of the 19th century. He's also very symbolic of why the country is dying. But we'll do that in the next recording. And I guess in a sense, this whole recording was more or less sort of like a kind of a prelude or just a confirmation of the death. The stubbornness of the right, of the conservatives, just the confirmation of how we are going downhill on this car without brakes. It's just going downhill and it's not stopping. It's just going faster and faster down the hill like the pigs in that Bible story. In Gadara, I think it was called, a region in over there in Israel. These pigs who like 2,000 pigs just running down downhill towards some water that was there, a river, I'm not sure, or a lake or whatever, and they all drowned, and these 2,000 pigs were just floating in the water. And that is basically what we're doing right now. We're running like pigs, I say we in a very kind of figurative and distant way, because I don't feel like I'm one of the pigs running. I'm sure I'm not. But we are, as a nation, collectively running like these 2,000 pigs downhill towards the Gadara and certain death, and we're not slowing down. The stupidity. Now, as we said, like Nikki Haley saying, we have to humanize abortion, but without judging abortion, just feminizing it, just matriarchal. Tucker Carlson saying, Russia's a Christian nation. Why? Because they are fighting Ukraine, and Ukraine is being supported by the left, by Democrats in the U.S. Hence, Russia are the good guys, and Putin is the good guy, and a hero of Christianity, a defender of Christian values. And that's why they're hated by America. And then in the meantime, we have poor Maria Sakkari having to put up with cannabis smoke in the U.S. Open. And you think, you know, you're in a first world country in a major, literally a major tournament, one of the four majors in professional tennis, a sophisticated tournament in a supposedly sophisticated country. And you have people smoking cannabis in the middle of a tennis match and no one doing a thing about it. Because as far as I know in the story, no one was, when she complained about it, it's not like everybody stopped the match and said, okay, let's find security. Please find the person who's been smoking cannabis and get him the hell out of here. Nothing. Like complete lawlessness. We're a third world country now. And then we have, you know, the hurricane hitting Florida, telling us, confirming to us that we needed to start from scratch and we needed to behold the sun and have the truth shine over us and reign over us instead of looking down at a whole bunch of dead sacred cows. And then we still have, and we have a whole bunch of idiots just saying, we need to get back to gold. We need to get back to gold and this fiat currency and blah, blah, blah. And just doubling down on their stupidity and their lack of understanding. This is one of the things that, has led the country to so much disaster. The Great Depression happened because FDR, amongst one of the many evil, stupid things he did, was to hold on to the gold standard. I read an article the other day. I wish I remember where it was, where the person writing it admitted he was writing about, you know, FDR and all that, and that he said one of the quick things he said was, the Depression was prolonged because FDR did not loosen the money supply. It held on to the gold standard. And I was surprised when I read that, but it was a confirmation. Yes, he tightened the money supply, and he did it on purpose because he wanted to have a nation that depended on him. He had this soothing voice, this pastoral voice of, oh, The only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and I'm here to comfort you. And he had these weekly, I think, radio shows on Sunday night, I think it was, I'm not sure. And everybody in the family, you know, American families, would gather around the radio and listen to this soothing voice telling them everything's going to be okay. So he loved that, you know, and it becomes this controlling thing, you know, this mother, smothering mother, that never lets go of the children. So he kept the country in constant depression. And if he held on to the gold standard, it was the ruin of our country until World War II came. And as we've said before, I was always surprised earlier, you know, when I would say, well, why, how did we, everybody keeps saying we came out of the Depression because we fought a war and we had to produce for a war. And I kept saying to myself, well, war is expensive. So wars tend to bankrupt countries. How can we have come out of the Depression by getting into a war? And what happened was when the war started, then economic activity had to be ramped up. And magically, we had the ability. See, we had been held back for 8 or 9 years by FDR. He held back the economy, But the moment we needed to start producing bombs and tanks and trucks and cars and rifles, we were able to do it in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. The economy suddenly was let go and then came back to life. And because we had to produce that, then all that stuff, we had to rely on that evil fiat currency. So the money supply was loosened, and then suddenly the economy thrived, and then World War II ended, and we just kept on going. In the 50s, you know, the roaring 50s, the prosperity that, you know, that seemed to know no bounds, and then into the 60s and so forth, because the problem was the money supply was not keeping up with GDP. That's the problem. See, as long as you tie it, if money is completely tied to the GDP, then everything is okay. But as long as you artificially constrain it, and you tinker with it, and you have some stupid people in the Federal Reserve saying, oh, we're going to increase the money supply, shorten the money supply, and just like they're playing God and manipulating the levers and as if the economy was some sort of puppet that they can control. When we have that, we have chaos. It should be a constitutional thing. Money should be tied to the money supply. The GDP grows 10%, the money supply needs to grow 10% accordingly. And then the money is introduced into the system through this methodology that we talked about before, where money is given to the banks to give out as loans. And that's how you increase the money supply. And so holding on to the gold standard has led to so much evil. Because we held on to the gold standard, FDR had the opportunity to institute the New Deal and all his leftist socialist garbage. It was done because he held on to the gold standard. We had the Democrats take control in 1874 because Grant foolishly held on to the gold standard. He short-circuited the loosening of the money supply that was started because of the Civil War. And that, you know, that is like somebody putting on the brakes suddenly. You're riding a bike or whatever, and you put on the brakes suddenly, and you just topple and, you know, go over. And that's what happened to the U.S. economy in 1874 because of the gold standard. But the conservatives keep saying gold standard, gold standard. So like pigs, just going down the hill. Instead of slowing down, like, hey, sucker, slow down, you're about to drown yourself. No, full steam ahead, chaps, full steam ahead. And in the meantime, we have, you know, January 6th prisoners rotting away, being sentenced to 15, 18 years in prison, and mothers, you know, just, you know, if you're going to run an insurrection, are you going to bring a mother of eight to fight for you in Congress? I mean, the people who think of January 6th as some sort of sophisticated insurrection to overthrow democracy in the country are a bunch of morons. And these poor people who got caught up in that because they had their faith, their fiat in Trump and the American Republic that died in 2008, these people are rotting away. There's no hope for them, and no one's going to be doing a thing about them. It's just so sad, so it's ironic that we are full steam ahead with our stupidity, but when it comes to be radical and doing something like Trump should have done to help these people, and put himself in prison if necessary, to defend these people, the radical things are not done. Then we exercise extreme caution, and suddenly it's not, oh, we don't run here, you know, we walk here and walk very cautiously. So on the one hand, conservatives act like pigs running down the hill, and then on the other hand, they suddenly go, we can't be extremist about it. The extremists are the Democrats. They are the radical extremists. We don't touch radical extremism. And because of that, the country is dying. So the message basically is, we are dying because we are running like pigs, when we have to, down the hill to drown ourselves. And at the same time, we are also slowing down and being very, very, you know, like Elmer Fudd, you know, be very, very, very quiet. You know, that's how they are. You know, just be very quiet and cautious and don't stir things up. You don't want to be too radical. And that's so, and they behave like that in the things where they do need to be radical, where they need to be running full steam ahead, kamikaze style, no holds barred, just going there and doing what needs to be done. So it's a kind of a very weird situation we're in, contradictory and strange, and that's why we're dying. Thank you very much for listening.